trying to make a piece of work that like genuinely affects culture is like the gold standard. And it's like, you may not win a single award for like a piece of comedy work, but you'd be like, every single person in every pub, park and prison around the country know the punchline to that thing you wrote. And I go like, that is like kind of like what you really want to aim for.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this episode, we speak with creative directors at Mother London, Tom Coleman and Derek Manlui. We discuss the pitching process, how to present an idea to client, and finding the right director for the job. This episode is sponsored by The Gate Plus, produced by Jack Kirkwood. I hope you enjoy. Now then, boys. Now then. Derek and Tom.
Thanks for coming on.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks for a virus, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. But the invitation came through you, Craig, right? From
it is, yeah.
An interesting way. And I think I kind of want to hear the origin story of it.
There's always a story with me meeting our guests, I feel like. Especially recently.
Yeah.
Hey, where do I begin? It's a difficult one. It's supposed to be top secret, this as well. But I found that I'm very good at murder mysteries. And it's funny, I started doing them last year just as a bit of a joke. And then, But then a producer, Will Preston, said, oh, I've got a stag do. Do you want to come and do a murder mystery? I've got a group of lads in this mansion in Bath. Do you want to come as a surprise? So I was like, bloody hell. How much?
How much?
Also, by the way, as in an American bloke, I've never been to a stag do. That was my first one. Oh, I didn't know what to expect.
Oh, this is what it is.
So basically, I got a train over to Bath with Sam Davies. He came with me and I just dressed up in a barber jacket and sunglasses and arrived at this mansion to be this murder mystery character that nobody knew I was coming. And so I went into this big mansion, there were 20 lads in there, and I basically were like, hey guys, I'm the supervisor of the building. Can I get you guys over on the bench just over there and just take a seat? And everyone's like sweeping up the glass off the floor and everyone's like, yeah, no problem, mate. Yeah, no problem.
So we were like drinking, having a barbecue, swimming, and then these two guys show up. I'm like, oh no.
I'm also dressed as a dinosaur as well.
Yeah.
A big inflatable dinosaur.
Are these the strippers?
Like, yeah.
Who else were with you? You do? Well, just me, really, but Sam Davies came as just like my right-hand man
to hang out. Oh my God.
Just to pretend to be there, really. So we had a crazy murder mystery that lasted about 3 or 4 hours.
And you guys were scared of him at first, right?
Yeah.
After we'd finished it, we're like, all right, so what's your names and where'd you come from?
So you had to take the mask off.
Yeah,
be like, by the way, I'm a normal person. I'm a normal bloke. I do know Will.
Yeah. So funnily enough, I was speaking to you, Derek, and you mentioned that you, you're a creative director at Mother.
Yeah, that's great.
And you're a partner with Tom, whose stag it was.
So it was yours.
Yeah, it was my stag. That's where I was dressed.
What, you just dressed as a dinosaur? What,
laugh? No, they dressed me up as the dinosaur, and then these two officious looking blokes turn up, and I was like, oh no.
You're like, all right.
Yeah.
He's just getting
good. So it's going to be hard to explain this dressed as a dinosaur.
Yeah. Oh my God. So that's where we are. That's how I met these guys.
Right, wow. Okay. That's a good origin story. I like it. All right. Well, from there then, could you two kind of tell us a little bit, like, give us a little insight about what you both do at Mother?
We're both creative directors. We are a creative director team. So at an ad agency, usually that consists of a writer and an art director. The funny thing is I kind of spent most of my career as a writer, and then I got teamed up with Tom, who's also a writer. I think he's a better writer than me, so I ended up doing the other thing, but so I'm sort of a hybrid. We just kind of do our thing together. We
all right.
Sell ideas, yeah. we make campaigns, go on film shoots. Yeah.
And how long have you guys been creative partners?
Was it like four years or something?
Five?
Yeah.
All right, so it's not like,
five,
you know, because obviously you hear about creative partners who've been together a long time and they've built up this thing, and one's this and one's the other, and they've gone through things together. So did you have different creative partners before?
So what's quite interesting, yeah, is we had separate creative partners, and then they both left. You got the agency. Oh, yeah, the agency we were working at. And it was during COVID, and we were all like, oh, we might lose our jobs. We need, like, let's work together. And then it kind of worked out really well. And we then moved from London. We then moved over to New York. We worked for a couple of years, and then we've kind of come back to
Back to Midsommar
in Shoreditch.
All right. So whereabouts, what's your kind of, whereabouts were you before? Because you were at Drogrified before Mother.
Yeah, we were at Drogrified before Mother, and then before that, we were at Wieden & Kennedy in London.
Right.
But yeah, you've worked everywhere.
My story's convoluted. I don't know if you want the whole thing.
But always in advertising.
Yeah, I'm from San Francisco, born and raised. And then just kind of around, like, a few years after the Obama recession. I'm not associating the recession with Obama. During that time, I was laid off as, like, I guess a junior writer, an intern. And then I packed my bags and I went to Shanghai. And I ended up working in China for about 7 years, lived in Shanghai, lived in Beijing, and then moved over to Europe, lived in London, did some freelancing in Berlin, went to New York, and now I'm back in London. So I've kind of taken this job as a way to see the world and kind of meet people and kind of learn about different perspectives and just make stuff, actually.
And then you met Tom, and Tom's like, you're not going anywhere, mate. Stay here.
Yeah,
you stay here with London.
Together.
I went from Wales to London. So New York, back to London, and I'll go back to Wales at some point.
Well, to New York to get you and then bring you back here.
Yeah.
Now you're staying here.
In Wales, they're like, oh, Tom's he's a New York boy now, huh?
Now I'm coming back. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Cool. And then so because that kind of, like, you know, when someone says, oh, I'm the creative director of Mother, like, what is, like, an average day for you two then? Like, what does that consist of? If for someone who doesn't know.
It's kind of, so it's like the process is quite interesting. So it's like, you know, in the creative department, like as Derek was saying, you'll either be a writer or an art director. Sometimes there are people that can do both, but they're quite rare to be, like, good at being able to do both. So you're in a team, and then, you know, you'll get a brief come in, and then it'll be your job as the creatives to then, like, solve the brief. You'll be like, here's, like, the idea. And then, you know, that might manifest as a film, it might manifest as, like, a kind of activation or kind of whatever. And then you report into the creative directors, and the creative director is then, like, responsible for the quality of the output across the whole kind of account.
Right.
Because, you know, like, each account may have, like, 5 or 6 briefs going on at once, and they all have their own individual creative teams. So you oversee everything, and then you help direct the work. You'd be like, okay, this is maybe not quite right, or for these reasons, maybe try this, maybe try that. And it's just sort of, essentially, yeah, and just making sure that everything reaches the certain standard it needs to, and maintaining that.
I think also that because we oversee a few accounts, they're sometimes in, like, different parts of the process. So, like, the shape of our day is, like, strange. Sometimes you're getting a deck together to present to a CMO, so that's in the creative stage, but you might be preparing for production, and then we might dip out to do sound or editing. So it's like, it's all parts of the creative process, which just makes it really fun.
Yeah, so you guys are overseeing a lot of projects as well then?
Yeah, usually 3.
Yeah, normally about 3, yeah.
3 at a time.
Must be interesting, because I mean, sometimes I find it hard if I've, like, got a doing, like, one job, and it takes, you know, like, if I'm directing something and it takes, you know, from pitch to finish, it can take a month or so or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I always find it hard if I've got different things going on, if I've got a pitch within that, or if I've got somewhere, I just feel like I have to have my blinkers on. So it must be quite interesting and hard for you guys to switch one job off and switch back into another. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I find it hard to kind of differentiate. Like, how do you split the job up sometimes between each year, or do you both go as a pair to oversee everything?
We usually do everything together.
Yeah.
But I would say if there is, like, if it's like just the schedule is just kind of, like, a bit hectic, I would say the general way we split things is, like, you would be a bit more on the production. Like,
yeah,
if it's,
yeah,
like, someone needs to go to a shoot, or we need to do, like, the actual, like, post or something. Whereas I tend to be a bit more of, like, the development side. I think just, like, that's a sort like, naturally. I think as an art director, well, I'm the writer, so as a writer, it sort of, like, naturally lends itself a bit more to convincing why you should buy an argument, and then as an art director, it's kind of having a bit more oversight of the craft of what you're making.
Bring it to life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And one thing that kind of grabbed me about your work is it's so out there. The projects that you've worked on.
You weirdos.
But you know, you work with some big directors as well, like Aim Ponjol's being one of them, and you know, just looking at the, you know, your work, I just wonder how the hell do you sell that to a client?
Well, especially at a time now when a lot of clients are, it feels like people are scared to do things a little bit outside of the box. So, and I always think it must be hard. One of the hardest processes is to sell an idea, especially when all you guys love it. Like, how would you tackle that?
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
I think I don't know if I have the answer, but to get a client to buy something that's a little out there, it just has to be incredibly logically sound in the way their product is positioned, but also when you bring it to life in film. Like this one thing we made with Ian for QuickBooks, which with the giant chickens, and so it's set in a cafe where the cafe owner is experiencing a nightmare where chickens are coming to collect the bills, and it's mayhem, it's frightening, it's like a horror film, and then she wakes up and you realize it was all a dream. Thankfully she has QuickBooks apps to help her manage her business. So in that, like, most of it is quite horrible, but we've kind of sold it to them in the sense that the more horrible it is, the more your product is in the light, you know.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it as well is like it's easy to make really bland, boring, bad advertising. And that's where I think a lot of it is kind of like essentially process-based, right, and argument-based. So it's like the kind of thing is you always want to go like, how can you do something that innately, intuitively sounds wrong and logically make that the right answer? So if you kind of look at the kind of like landscape, here's what all your competitors are doing. If you do the same thing as that, you just bleed into it, you won't stand out. So then that prepares them for going like, okay, we're going to have to take a risk. We're going to have to put ourselves out there. Because if we don't, we're going against the recommendation of the people we paid to do this. And then if it fails, it's our fault. Whereas if we push them to do a risk and it fails, that's my fault and they can just fire us. So a lot of it is like, you kind of go, the reason you've hired us is because we give you an outside perspective that you need. And then it's down to them whether they want to kind of run with that.
And the work ends up being effective because it is out there,
right?
But it's that's confidence going with that to a client and be like, you know, and the confidence with you guys taking those risks as well. Because I feel like you see more and more, you know, when you see an ad like that, what comes out, it sticks with you. But a lot of them, I don't know. I don't know if it's like just people not taking any more risks, but I just feel like it seems like you guys have a knack for selling the strange and executing it really well.
Yeah, I think that again comes down to the sort of like, you know, when you're selling these kind of things, you're also selling them to, like, it's not just like one client. There'll be 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 of them. And it's kind of building the argument. So it's like a process of like small steps, and you get everyone to agree to the step and they go, okay, we don't want to be the same as everyone else, so we need to do that. We don't want to, do you know what I mean? And it's kind of like you incrementally arrive at the answer, and it's like by the time you get to it seems like there isn't another way of doing it, because you've kind of bought people in on the we don't just turn up and go, it's this crazy out there thing, because there's got why. Yeah, I need to, and you need, people need to see how the sausage is made. And then when they sort of are on that process with you, there's not, yeah, they can't really argue with it. I mean, they can do, but that then requires some bravery on their side as well. So it kind of, it's like you don't ever want to try and get something over on somebody. That's not that you do it because you think it'll work. And then the reason why you then defend it is because, again, not because we're precious around working with an out there director, but going like, oh, it won't work, it'll fail. And then like that's then right, that's worse than just making something boring, something that doesn't work.
Yeah, I also think that personally that advertising or commercial work is inherently wasteful thing to do. It costs millions of dollars, wastes a lot of people's time, costs a lot of resources, flights and all that. And then it usually will run for a couple weeks and it'll go away and you'll just make more of them. So like if we have the opportunity it's like the risk is not using the opportunity to make something interesting and just like to have a good time making something that cuts through.
I mean, it's great to hear you talk about this, but and maybe it's just because there's different tiers, I think, in advertising, and there's different tiers in scripts. But I guess the scripts that we see, Ozzy, are not quite as brave or as out there as maybe what you guys are working on. And I guess from our point of view, we get a lot of things that are so safe and clients that don't want to push the boundaries. So,
yeah,
how do you go about looking for directors for your project? How does that come? How do you set? Is it you guys who go out there, or do you get presented a?
We want to generally have like we'll figure out like what the tone of the idea is, and then we'll generally sort of have a pool of people we think that could do it. And it's not necessarily that their work needs to like reflect the exact thing we're looking to make. Often you don't want something on the reel that's similar to what you're making, but just someone you go like, okay, I know that you, for example, like can create really immersive worlds, or I know that you are great with realism and like getting people to connect with other humans. And it can come in any form, but it's like you're just looking for like the kind of house style of somebody. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I think that's where it's like we as a creative team, we don't necessarily have a house style. So then we then have to rely on directors that have quite clear visions who know how they're going to bring something to life. And then that's the part where we hand the job over and we go, right, cool. Like,
yeah,
I've done our bit. You need to deliver on your bit.
Yeah. I also feel like it's our responsibility that when the work reaches the director, I guess in the form of a director's deck, a lot of it has been figured out. Like the world has been built, not just visually, but logically. So in the sense that we imagine that the work at some point will be kind of cut down by feedback so that it, at its core, it still holds on to something true rather than it just being like, oh, it looks great. It sounds great. It's sort of funny. The client could just kill a joke and then that goes away. So we want to make sure logically in terms of the script structure, the world, all of that is like in place. And then when we give it to a director, they can kind of bring it to life, make it leap off the page.
Yeah.
So what is it the main thing you would look at then if like a treatment gets landed in front of you? And obviously, because you've gone through so many stages to get it, the script, to get it to a certain point, I guess sometimes the fear is like, you know, if a script comes to me, I'm always like, how much wiggle room do I have here to kind of alter things, to change things? Because you've already got it past a certain point. So when you see a treatment, what is the main thing for you guys when you're looking at it and going like, that's the person for this job?
For us, I would say like our best work happens because we've allowed the director to do their thing. When it feels like they're trying to assume what the marketing brief is and trying to stick close to making sure we do the right thing, it usually doesn't work. So it's like when they've kind of done something that we didn't see coming, especially after spending like months on it, like, oh wow, this is like totally different. I want you to have the job and I want to like hold the clients back and let you do your thing. That's when like the work ends up being the best.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think as well, it's like when we write scripts, we generally write them as like short stories. Mm. So it's no like, we cut to this, we see this. It's like, actually, no, it's more like we see this, this thing happens. There's no like, we're gonna write no stage direction in it.
No, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like—
it's like the backbone of what it is.
This is what needs to happen.
Yeah.
How it happens is—
yeah, give us the meat.
Yeah, like what's the treatment? Like what is the layer you're gonna add to this that we didn't have there? And you go like, if it's about like, you know, if the thing we're trying to evoke is like something that's heartwarming, like getting a treatment where it's like, okay, we're gonna like play into nostalgia, we'll do it all in black and white. We're like, oh cool, we didn't think of that. Mm. That's a really interesting world to play in. You know, it's like when you're surprised by someone having a take on your idea that you didn't have, is then you're like, okay, this feels new now, this feels exciting. It's not like, it's not just a kind of like storyboarded thing that we've written. It's like a take on the idea.
Yeah. Rather than something just being regurgitated back to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's like, we could make that.
Yeah.
It's like you're looking for someone that has a clear vision of what they want out of the job. And then when somebody has that clear vision, like, okay, you're going to care about this a lot.
Mm.
And I think when you get something that someone has given you something safe. I don't know if it means they don't necessarily care about it, but it's more like if it was they don't really want it as much. Like they don't want the opportunity. They want the job. Do you know what I mean? And they're kind of quite different things.
I guess you can interpret that one as like enthusiasm, right?
Yeah.
You've dived into the topic as deeply as we have and come back and found something that we couldn't find.
Yeah.
And then, because obviously there's usually like three treatments floating about. How important to you guys is the initial call with a director? Like the initial, right, okay, these are our people. Let's get them on a Zoom. Because they're intimidating, Zoom calls, especially if, you know, you haven't worked with someone before and you don't know how, like, to be enthused, like how to turn a voice, you know. Sometimes I get too excited, me, and I feel like I'm just talking and getting like yelling, and especially if I'm a room full of people, I have to like apologize afterwards because it's just like too, like I feel like I'm being too intense.
Yeah, you sound really great on your calls, I think.
Thank you, Craig.
You got to be optimistic though and excited. Otherwise, like,
yeah. I just wondered like how important that initial call is, you feel. Even if, you know, you could be like, this treatment's wicked. I can't wait to speak to this person. If you haven't
before. This might not be a big deal to you, but it's quite a big deal. This first call, it's quite a big deal to us.
Especially if you like find something, a script, and you're like, God, this is so up my street. Yeah. This is screaming me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you jump on.
It's definitely important because it's like, you've got to work closely with these people and you have to be able to go like, okay, I understand that there's a relationship here where I can be honest with this person.
Right.
And it's not going to get like defensive or catty. It's like criticism is a critique of the work. It's not a critique of the person. You like, you want that kind of stuff, right? You want to be able to, like, okay, I can be on a like intense 3-4-5 day shoot and we'll get something great out of it. I think the initial cause actually, kind of the thing you're looking for is like, is the person interested in the job is the main thing. Getting a gauge of like how busy they are as well. Cause it's like, you don't want to be working with someone that's on like three other jobs and you're going like, you're kind of fitting this in and it feels like they're going to like half-ass it a bit. And a lot of it is kind of understanding the team of people they have around them and going like, are the production company going to be able to be on top of this? Cause the worst is when you have a great director, a great treatment, and then a production company just cannot deliver on it. And you're going, you've overpromised. And so what you're looking for really is kind of going like, how engaged is the producer? Are they going to be on top of everything? Are they going to be making, because you can't always rely on a director to be like super organized. Like, this is not what they're there for.
So it's actually interesting to hear your perspectives. Like, what do you feel is expected of you on this initial call?
I always think to show enthusiasm, to show that like, well, that's the reason why I'm on the call and why I've said yes to being on it, because I'm just like, I want to show these people that I really care and I've thought about the idea and this is what I think would be best for the idea. And then I'm always like, if that's not their take on it, then that's fine. I'll go and cry in the corner later, you know, it's fine.
Well, I guess from our point of view, it's like actors going for a casting call, isn't it? It's like, this is our, we're 1 in 3 and we're about to go in the room and kind of give you a piece of us and almost sell what we're about, sell our tone of voice. Because as much as you can look at the work and be like, all right, cool, I like that. Like you said, Tom, you've got to work with these people. And I think one good thing you just did say then is just having that breath to be critical and have constructive feedback, because it can get really tight on some sets where you don't always have the answers and it's a collaboration and it's a finding what it is in it. And I think it's important for us on that level, isn't it?
It's like a safe space. I think you were on.
But sometimes it can be quiet on them calls, you know, where maybe we jibber jabber on and then suddenly just silent.
Especially if you've just finished a sentence and you go, what do you think? Over to you.
We do that to you on purpose. It's a test.
Yeah, especially like, you know, cause we know you've seen our treatment, everyone's read it. And then it's like, right, tell us. And you go, I usually have like, you do it. I usually have my notes on one side in the treatment and I bullet point all the key things that I want to express. And then, but like you say, then there's that pause, isn't there?
Okay.
And then you just see everyone doing that. Thank you.
I guess, again, from our point of view, there's a lot on it because it's a job to job basis, how a lot of directors work. And I guess coming from an agency, you've got that family, you've got that, I guess, certain amount of security. So for us, there's a big pressure there. I think this is it's a very competitive industry, and there's a shit ton of directors out there.
Yeah.
And if you get a script through the door, you want to get that script.
Yeah.
I do anyway, you know, you don't want to miss it. So there's a lot of pressure, I think, we put on ourselves when we jump on that call. And a lot of directors, when they don't get the job, they take it really hard, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know one director who doesn't take it a bit personal as well. Because what the tough thing is like the hard thing is like separating yourself from the work as well, and you as a person. It's like you really you failed when there's so many other factors going on, I'm sure.
It's interesting though, because it's like that's also it's like the creative process before it even gets to anywhere near being kind of on your lap is like there's iteration and iteration of like coming up with ideas, presenting them up the line, being killed, being fed back on, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, it's interesting because it is mirrored. Do you know what I mean? It's like we go through the same process just before. And it's like, I always feel quite weirdly bad about not being able to award the job to sort of like everybody because, you know, a lot of work goes into getting the treatment together. And then it's like, you have to put a lot into it and you have to go like, again, if you know, if it's a good one, you go like, this is my take on it. This is what I think you should do. And then for someone to go, I think you're wrong. You're just like, sort of fairly zero-sum game at that point, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I can see how that's like a...
But I guess what matters is you've put your truest vision on the page and you've kind of shared it with us. Like, I just to reiterate what Tom was saying, like, honesty is the most important thing. Like, even if you, in your treatment, pointed out that actually you guys got it wrong, and this is what it should be. I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't think about it like that, you know? And that's part of the chemistry. And us, we're all at that stage when it's just writing. We don't know what it looks like in the final, as a final product. So, like, it's about finding that partner to kind of build something together.
And I guess talking about directors and talking about, you know, pitching, do you always like to go with the director who signed to a production company? Or do you work with freelancers? How does it work with you guys?
I think a lot of it will just depend on the project.
I guess does it matter, I guess, is the question.
Not necessarily, but it's like, you know, if we've worked with, like, we work with directors who are like, I think, so the first thing is we always like to try and like find people that are like not just done to death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the nature of that is sometimes that like they'll have made like 3 indie films and they're not repped by anyone. But the process is like, they go like, okay, we need to try and get these people signed by a production company who can actually make sure the thing is delivered. Because, you know, it's like, it's not like our money, it's the client's money, and they want to be able to account for every single penny that's spent somewhere. So, you know, just with the sort of like structure of a production company, it's just like an easier process in terms of just like the logistics of it. But for us, it doesn't make a difference, but it would normally be like, okay, cool. You need someone to rep you like now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think us trying to find different directors is like, there's this word we always use, which is like addy. And I think when you find new voices and work with like up and coming directors, you might bring something to the table that feels a bit different, that doesn't stick to the formula. And yeah.
Breaks the mold a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it kind of goes back to what you were saying about like, the bigger package is like not just the director, it's like safeguarding what surrounds that person as well is just as important as who the director is.
100%. And it's like, you know, sometimes you'll get treatments and you're like, wow, this is like incredible. And you're kind of running the numbers and you're like, okay, we've got one shoot day. And I know that we're not going to get these 30 boarded shots. And I know that we're not going to be able to shoot it all on film. Like, you know, so like then again, it's like when the production company has sort of like done its due diligence, it's like, I want to believe that whatever's in that document is like a binding contract and going like, this is what you said you'd do. And it's like 3 weeks down the line, if it's going like, actually, it's like,
ah, you said it.
Yeah, and then it just means you won't work with a production company again because you can't trust them to deliver on what they promised you.
Especially when treatments now are becoming more like some wild treatments get made. So it's like anyone can make it visually interesting, like you guys must all know the iCandy website and Shot Deck and everything. Like, I always get like, when I look at sites like that and I'm putting trips, I'm like, God, how many people are just regurgitating everything else? Because you must see all the same imagery. Like, sometimes I'm always like, I just want to just like one image and there's like a bit of writing or a different image or something. How much do you see AI in treatments now? Like AI Midjourney images being used?
I mean, we use it every day.
All right, okay.
So it's in our storyboards and all that. It's unavoidable. I don't love it because it feels cold and uncanny, and I love to pull from film stills and photography if possible, but it's just part of the process now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go on Google Images and pick, I'll just take the first thing and that's it.
And sometimes, like sometimes maybe, you know, when you're pitching to client, you don't like, is it sometimes visually better to undersell it visually to that stage? Like the writing's there and then let it kind of grow more once it's being given to a director.
Again, it sort of depends on the client. It's like our use of AI tools are like done for, not for like a representation of like what it will look like. It's generally done for like trying to just visualize the script. Mm. So if you're going like, you know, we open on a dog driving a car along a rainbow, there's a handful of images like that exist on Earth. So you just bang it into Midjourney, you'll spit something out. And it won't always be great quality, but they'll be able to go, oh, okay, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's kind of done more for just like storytelling purposes rather than like, it's going to look like this kind of like weird, uncanny thing that data has spat out.
To your point, it does kind of suck that like the strength of these tools, which they're very useful, but it makes everything look too finished already. And there's this next expectation of what it will look like in the end.
It can be tough. I mean, I've had, even to the point of even like sometimes drawing a storyboard, and you guys will know once you get to set, sometimes things can shift and you know, you go, oh, actually this angle is a little bit better for this. I've had it literally where a client goes like, that doesn't look like the storyboard. And I've already explained it. And they'll go, and they'll be like, yeah, but this is the reason. And that's, you know, and they'll go, no. We signed that exact board off. And it was to do with eyeline as well, which was painful for me. Cause it was like eyelines, like looking like they thought it was like POV and it wasn't.
Right.
And they thought it was, and there was just some miscommunication. I just shot twice. Just put an eyeline there and then put it there.
And the eyeline was from a Midjourney character with that's dead behind eyes.
Exactly, yeah. Like they were like cross-eyed like that. So we were both winning. Do you know what I mean? We were both right.
I think that comes back to something that we were talking about on the previous pod with the pressures of client to agency to director to production company, and it's kind of like how do I put it? I guess confidence to be brave, confidence to be bold. And I think we were talking about how there's a lack of it these days and everything's more on the line because it feels like the budgets are a lot more stripped back, which means then you want to go with a director who you can really trust. So that means it's kind of like the gap for upcoming directors narrows a little bit. And so you can't go too far away from the script. Have you felt that, guys, that kind of like pressure from above, you know, in terms of like keeping something quite formulaic and rigid in terms of?
I think it's like a symptom of like a kind of like testing and a way of kind of being able to like avoid decision making and avoid accountability if things go wrong. Like, I think that sort of has been like a little bit of a problem for a while. And it's why you maybe see kind of stuff that feels quite like generic or rigid or sort of like, I've seen this before somewhere. But I think it's like the approach that we always take. And I think coming back to a like eyeline story, it's like, I think, again, it's about creating a really good relationship with your clients and treating them as partners. And it's like, I think when people try to kind of like wrangle control, it's like a fear thing. So it's always kind of like going like, right, I'm not going to do what you told me to, because that's not what we need to do. What I need to understand is like what you want to achieve. And then when you tell me what you want to achieve, I can tell you that doing this eyeline shot is wrong because it's not going to edit correctly. So what you want to do is like, oh, you're looking for continuity. And I know that maybe that isn't, it's not the same as boarded, but like, I know what you're trying to achieve. And then I think it's like, again, it's just trying to find a way of just getting people to trust that you're working in their best interests.
Mm. Which everyone is, usually you'd think. I don't know, I always get funny with with some directors if they do director's cuts, and I get director's cuts, but I always, if it comes on air or something and I'm like, oh, but it's not my cut, I always feel a bit weird. I'm always like, I just want to make the cut that everyone's happy with. I don't know, I always get really, really funny with it. Just want to like, do you guys ever do your own cuts of things?
We try not to,
I think.
Yeah, we do have a perspective on director's cuts. It is important to get something on your reel that you put out to get more jobs and, you know, to build your portfolio. But it's like, in the end, it's not the thing that the world will see, and it's not the thing that will impact culture. It's made in a vacuum. It's not real. So we try our best to make sure we take the client along for the journey and make sure that the work will end up, like, all the stakeholders are bought in, including the director, that the piece we put forward is the best it could be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I kind of get it when it's just like, if what you're bound by is like, it's like a short film, like, you know, it's like a short time frame, and someone's going, I've got 60 seconds of footage here and it's a 30 and a bunch of stuff has ended up on the cutting room floor. It's like, we'll always try and go like, okay, cool. Like we'll try and get an online version of it being slightly longer played out. Yeah. So then it means that it doesn't become essentially like speculative work that you can't. So, because it's great to being able to like show what you can do and all of this kind of stuff, but it also means it sort of stays within the realm of the industry, but also not the wider industry, because it's not entered into awards or any of that kind of stuff. So it's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, unless you have gone onto the production company's website and then found it, you're unlikely to see it anywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is quite nice if you've, say you've done like a charity piece and it's a, you know, 30 or a 60, but obviously sometimes if it's a more of a story and narrative led thing, you know, if I got a brief and it was like, right, we just need a 30 and a 60, but I kind of went to you and was like, look, I can provide, I think with the time frame and the budget, I could do like a 2-minute piece with this and it'd be really, really nice, but you'll also get your 30 and your 60. I mean, that's, I'd say that's, what have you guys come across that before, when it's like people pitching that sort of thing? Because it's kind of a win-win, is it? I don't know. Or would you go like, well, we don't need it?
But usually, I think selfishly, I just want to shoot more.
Yeah.
So for the director's cut, but also just to have more to work with in the final edit. But I think things are, like you guys were saying, are changing these days, and they just want to do what's sort of safe and responsible and not spend a little more to get the dream cut.
Yeah.
But I think even to the real point of going like, I know you've asked for a 30 and a 60, but I could do you a two-minuter. It's always kind of going like, the media booked will be 30, and you go like, so you board for a 30,
yeah,
and we shoot for a 30, and then you're, and if there's more, great, but it can't be, we're actually going to kind of like essentially treat on a slightly bigger thing, and then from that we'll cut you a 30, because it's like, yeah, it's not to say it can't work, it could be like literally this the same, you know what I mean, but you're just going, we found efficiencies here and there. I guess it's like the sort of, you know, the responsible thing to do in terms of going like, when it's somebody else's money, you're going like, this is what we need you to do.
Yeah.
But if you're able to then make something bigger out of that, then like, fantastic.
I love also how if the job's like for a 30, the treatment, the script is like 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
You just think a little, you just look into the PDF and you're like, man, it's 100 pages here.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I think it also comes back to, again, we have this conversation quite a lot, but it's like, it's not your work. It's, you do.
Well, that's the separation thing, isn't it? Which is really, really hard.
Which brings me on to my next question. Do you get emotionally attached to your work, or do you have to kind of keep it as like, no, that's work, that's a product, and I get my creative fulfillment out of something else emotionally? Or
I think as you get more experienced, you get better at like not taking it so personally, and like, I think when you get to the sort of like creative director level, you're often managing many jobs. So it's like, as a creative, you may spend 3 months developing something, and then you may spend 2 months making it. And then at the end of it, if it's not great, it's 5 months of your time and career gone into it. But when you're sort of managing quite a few jobs, you go like, okay, well, they're not all going to be bangers. Like, it's just the nature of it. So your hit rate is sort of like less dependent on like every one thing being the thing. But I think you still have to just really give a shit, because it's like, otherwise your hit rate will be nothing.
Yeah, you have to
like,
care.
Yeah. You have to, you absolutely have to, because it's like, if you don't, nobody will. And at that point, it's like, whether the brief is amazing or not, whether the opportunity is like amazing or not, it's like, you have to treat it as such, because otherwise it's like, it just sort of infects everything. And then
yeah, you also can't help but put yourself in it. Mm. So like, I guess you were talking about effort, like you always have to care, but also in terms of taste and our sensibilities and what we find interesting and funny, like no matter what the project is, we go all in and we put our stuff into it, what we love. And like, I think you were saying our body of work, while we think there isn't a specific tone to it, I think someone, an outsider might see like, oh, there's like a Tom and Derek thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to describe it, but like, we always try to put that in.
And it's just like, that's it. It's finding like, it's like, and that's where you want to sort of really circle back to like the kind of like what you look for in a treatment. It's going like, you want the treatment that has a very clear vision. It's like extremely something. So it's like, if you're going to make something emotional, make it the most emotional it can be. Make it super saccharine. If you're going to make something scary, make it like a genuine like German expressionist horror. Like, just really commit to it and like don't flinch. And then it's like, because you have to sort of really, you have to really stay on that.
Imagine your treatment shaking. Yeah. Well, it's great to hear that, because sometimes you get a treatment and you go, I think I know what these guys want.
Mm.
So I'm going to give them it.
Yeah.
But sometimes read the treatment, you go, oh, fuck this. I'm going to bring the flesh to the bones and really bring my voice to it. But sometimes you have that like little battle in your head where, do I give them what they want, or do I really lean into what I can bring to it? And it's really refreshing to hear you say that, because that's just like the green light of just like bring yourself into it, just like you guys do.
Yeah.
Mm. Because you can really be, you know, you can be quite on the edge with that.
Well, for feeling like you've got to, you want to think in you giving them what they want, but really they want to know what you want.
Yeah.
From it.
Yeah.
There's this thing we like to say is, if there's a piece of feedback to like, oh, make it more heartwarming, right? We have this thing called malicious compliance, where like, okay, they want it heartwarming, we'll make it so heartwarming that we'll regret it. It'll be so saccharine and so cringe. And I feel
Yeah, and I think it's like, it is a collaborative process, and you're kind of doing work at the request of somebody else, but it's like, it is ultimately a kind of like, it has to be a selfish endeavor. Yeah. So it's like, when you're asking someone, like when we go out to directors, I'm going like, I don't want you to tell me what you think I want to hear. Yeah. I want to see what you think about it. And I want you to go, this would be the best piece of work for me to make for me. And then I'll go, okay, that's what they want. This is what the clients want. This is what we want. And then we'll kind of find a way of making it work for everybody. Because otherwise, it's like, we're already starting from a compromised position. And I think that's kind of like, that's like when you kind of get that like alignment, is that that's when you don't need a director's cut, for example.
Yeah.
It's great to hear that. And that, you know, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like, I think there needs to be more integration with like production and agency as well, because I think these conversations are really helpful, because there definitely is kind of like a divide. And like me, we were saying, I was like, there's a smoke and mirrors thing, like what goes on behind the agency doors, like, you know, and us being on this side, we genuinely don't know. We just see the brief that comes out. And we go, what the fuck is this? So that's all we see. So this is great to talk about. And yeah, to hear you guys say that is...
Do you ever get stuff where you're just like, this doesn't make any fucking sense at all? Like, this has been written by committee.
We're
like,
responsible for something.
And do you ever then go, well, I can even tell by the quality of the writing here that I don't want to make this. I can't make this any better than what
you need to make it.
Yeah.
But I must.
Yeah. What's this dog find on the rainbow?
Driving. Yeah. Drive on the rainbow. Yeah, man. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I see it more like, I feel like I see like a lot of like middle tier briefs, and I feel like and commercials, and I think I see it a lot in that. It's just safety and not much has been put into it. But sometimes I get a real buzz off that because I'm like, all right, it's a little bit bare. Well, let's try and put some on it, like, and then see if I can make it better than it is. And I used to do it with like music videos. So I come from a lot of like music videos, and it was like, even if I got sent a track from an artist I didn't particularly like or listen to, but if it created an idea for me, and I was like, well, how can I make a video for this person that's going to make me listen to that music? And I'd take it like that, and then I'd do it, and usually I'd win those ones.
It was a challenge.
Yeah, because like, I mean, a lot of the music videos I did were artists I didn't listen to, but then I ended up like making stuff I was really, really proud of. Because there was not much to there. If it was an artist I really loved, the pressure would be so on, and I'd be like, God, I've got to write something that's gonna be amazing, and they're gonna love it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, kind of nonchalant about it. I'm like, this is what I want to do. I won them all.
But that's the great thing about being the underdog as well in a deck. Sometimes you get told, oh, you're the
wildcard.
You're the wildcard. Mm. And you're like, all right, sweet. Game, I'm going to put something a bit crazy on this. And then you end up winning it, usually.
Well, I guess this is what we were saying about that initial meeting. In that case, you weren't trying to anticipate what the person wanted. You just did what you wanted. Yeah. Versus an artist that you love, you're like, oh, will they like this? Or, you know,
exactly, yeah. They've done all this before, though, so they must like all this. And yeah. I don't know, as soon as you kind of like tuned out of that.
You did your thing.
You just do your thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same during sort of the creative development process, though, at an agency. It's like big opportunities have a lot of pressure, which then make it kind of often quite hard to deliver on. And kind of, you can sort of, you know, get lost in it. And at the same time, like, you know, when you're dealing with millions of dollars of a budget, like, that's not your film. Like, that has like a lot of eyes on it. There's a lot of accountability, there's a lot riding on it. But you know, when you have these like mid-tier jobs for maybe brands that you don't know a huge amount about, and it's a chance to like really get something away. And that's where you can kind of like, you know, you'll see like a bunch of great stuff coming out from you. Like, how did you get away with that? Like, oh, because there's not a committee of people assessing every single like frame of the film.
Yeah, as much risk.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
I'd say so, yeah. Or just like, you just, there's room to express yourself a little bit more sometimes in the middle tier stuff, I think.
I think they need it more too.
Yeah.
To like have a voice and create something that people will pay attention to. Yeah.
Bit of music on it background though.
Nice.
But yeah, I guess it brings it back to, I can't remember who said this, it might have been on a documentary that I watched, that and I don't think this is the right thing now, but the lower the budget, the more creative freedom you have. I think that used to be correct. I don't think it is now.
Well, it's like being surrounded by limitations, and the more limitations you have, then you're figuring out creative ways to, I don't know, to make it as good as it can, which is quite fun.
Yeah.
Rather than like, here's all the toys. It's like a little kid going into a room full of every single toy they love. They're just going to be overwhelmed. But rather than being like, right, you've got these three toys, do something with it.
Yeah.
And you're like, right, okay, what can I do? Like, can be quite freeing, can't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why it's great seeing, you know, like mining, like for like undiscovered commercial talent in music video world, right? Because, you know, you'll go, oh, this is like incredible. And then you'll see some of the work, like, you know, like maybe first few jobs of like on their reel of like paid commercial work. And you're like, God, this is bad. But you're going like, this, I know that the thing that you've done here with no money is like you doing like what you want, because you've probably not had a huge amount of, you haven't been paid massively for it. So like the opportunity is like the expression. But then sometimes when it kind of like moves into sort of like paid work, it's like, okay, I guess I will do what I'm told.
Yeah. Do you still see music videos being important? Do you still pay attention to them? As like, who's done that? Like, look at that director. And because a lot, obviously now it's becoming harder and harder for music videos, and there's not much money in it, and people are trying to do them in completely different ways.
But I just wonder what, from an agency side, what they look at, if they still pay attention to it, basically.
Yeah, we watch a lot of music videos. I think there's also like a lot of interesting work on Vimeo, but also just stuff on like Instagram and Twitter, not necessarily content. I think we were having a conversation earlier about like when you hire a director who's a bit higher tier that might be backed by a production company. We have done a job for an unnamed brand because it never came out, but we found some, basically some internet weirdos, five of them, and we asked a production company to rep them to get the job going, and we ended up shooting stuff that ultimately didn't run, but it was like our chance to do something that felt a little bit different and not commercial.
Cool.
Mm.
That's amazing.
And then kind of like, and I think in the kind of like, as we were talking to earlier, it feels like that this sort of like commercial world has been gutted slightly in terms of like actual kind of like standout pieces of work. So then it's kind of like, you're not really, this of course it still happens, but you're looking more and more outside of advertising to find interesting voices and like emerging talents, because the quality of work that's being produced within the industry isn't, you know, I wouldn't say it's like rock bottom, but it's not like being blown away by a new piece of advertising every day. But you know, you'll see like three or four good music videos a day.
Yeah,
it's funny though, isn't it? 'Cause we always talk about making your own work, and just it's good to hear you guys say that, you know, when you've got no money and you're making something for yourself, that's when your true tone of voice comes, and you can see a director or an artist for really who they are, with no client attached. And so you've done well on your brother. I've recently just done a film on my brother as well. Totally different approach. But I found myself recently going into, I've been having presentations in agencies, showing them this piece of work, which is a real intimate, raw piece that kind of puts a spotlight on my brother up north and our really complicated relationship growing up. You know, I'm one of three brothers and we've all grown up on a farm. We've all come out completely different. And I've held it back, and I've been having presentations in agencies and not showing a commercial work, but showing them something that's really personal. And it does leave a mark. I think it's important for directors to go out there and make stuff that's completely detached to any brand or any commercial, make stuff that's not a spec ad, but purely from, you know, the love.
Well, then you're throwing it back at someone going like, this is me.
This is me, yeah. Mm.
Spec ads are strange. I still think spec ads are strange. Do you guys think
spec ads? I think they're strange.
Yeah.
Just make something that you want to make.
I never understand them. It's like, I'm doing this for a spec ad. I'm like,
but it's like half what you want to do and half what you kind of wanting to pitch. It's like, well, if you make something you love, it's going to connect.
Yeah.
But it's also strange because it's like approaching directing as like a solely commercial endeavor is not the kind of person you want to work with, right? You go like, we are the corporate sellouts. We want to work with artists, and then to go like, oh, you're also a corporate seller. That's not what I'm looking for. You know.
I was talking to Adric the other day, and I was like, love commercial filmmaking, and obviously, you know, pays the bills and it gives you a lot of tools to kind of make other work. But I didn't get in this to be a commercial filmmaker. I got in it because I loved telling the stories that I were attracted to and that I were drawn to. Suddenly you find yourself, whatever, 10 years in, and you're like, fuck me, when was the last personal project I made for myself? Because you're so swallowed up in making commercials and all the rest of it, you're like, you forgot about why you got into it in the first place. And there's that many directors that have not made any personal piece for maybe 10 years or maybe even ever, actually. And their only connection to it is through brands and commercial. And I find that really strange. I'm like, I've got to make some. I just get depressed if I don't make anything for me.
Yeah. The funny thing also with spec ads is like, as someone on the inside at the agency, it's like you've made something devoid of any real brief or consideration, and it just shows that like this is not like a real setting. Like it's made in a vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyone making spec ads?
You're making a spec ad, stop right now.
More that, of your own stuff.
Yeah. With all that then, like, I'd like how important do you think awards are and award ceremonies and commercial awards and who's winning awards? And
you know, because it's one of them things where it's like you feel like you don't care, but if you win, you win them. You're like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, you know, it's great.
It's a tricky one because it's like, I think so, like where we sort of, or at least where I like professionally grew up at Wieden and Kennedy, it was very much like a kind of like, it made you like a little bit cringe to care about it. But then, you know, someone would make an amazing piece of work and it would win all the awards and you'd be like, amazing, amazing, you won all the awards. So it was kind of like trying to make a piece of work that like genuinely affects culture is like the gold standard. And it's like, you may not win a single award for like a piece of comedy work, but you'd be like every single person in every pub, park and prison around the country know the punchline to that thing you wrote. And you're going like, that is like kind of like what you really want to aim for. But at the same time, it's like awards mean a lot within the industry because it's like they just do. And it's like, I think they also mean quite a lot to sort of like the agency perception potentially by clients. You're like, okay, it proves that they have reached a certain level of excellence within as judged by their peers.
Yeah. Yeah. Stamp of approval.
Yeah.
It's such a tricky question because I guess as someone who's worked in emerging markets, and awards are a way, at least for agency creatives, a way out into one of the major markets in like London or New York. So if you want something, you could submit that for your visa as proof of your excellence to get in, to get a job somewhere else. However, I guess what we don't like is sometimes people try to figure out what wins an award, which becomes kind of like trying to like stick to a formula or predict what's hot or what like, you know, maybe you might be making something for social purpose because you know that will win awards. And I guess what we were taught at Wieden Kennedy is like, just solve the brief really well and the awards might come.
Yeah. Whereas like kind of like scam work or like work that like solves such a weirdly specific problem that you can tell it's engineered for an award submission.
You can smell it.
Yeah, and you just like, that's not real. Like, it's just not real. That's like, that was, and again, it's like, to sort of, to Derek's point, it's like, to get out of certain emerging markets, it's like, that stuff is super useful. And there's also not always like huge budgets on briefs to make pieces of work that are generally kind of considered like, in the main markets, like, to sort of hit the bar of excellence. So, yeah, it's a tricky one.
You can smell it though. It's like when directors chase them charity scripts, you know, to think, you know, but I've got no attachment, understanding or connection to the charity piece they're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, you fucking see it a mile off. But when you find a director who genuinely cares about this subject or has been through it, you win awards, you know, because it comes from an emotional place, doesn't it?
And it's insightful because they care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Heyo. Where are we on the old questions, Ozzy? My laptop's froze.
Kind of been flowing with it.
Yeah, it's nice.
It feels good.
I feel like we've got you guys in the corner and we're like, we've got you, you know, by we've got tell everything. Yeah.
Give us the information.
Well, that's someone's just listening to us for a change.
It's really nice to have you on here though and have a conversation about it.
Did you guys ever think, I want to be a director? Because I always think from, like, surely you must have that inkling. Like, actually, guys, I think we should make this one.
Well, you've got the storytelling, you know, gene inside.
Yeah, and you've been on some countless sets.
It's really funny because it's like, we were like, you know what? Let's like, we'll write and direct something. And then we started writing it and we were like, oh, fuck this. Like, I think you have to like really want to do it. Mm. Like, you have to really be willing. It's like, it's kind of like, that's why like love about like being around directors like doing their job is because you're like there's like a part, it's like innate, there's something within these people that's like this is what they do. And then I think as we were trying to go through the process, we're like, oh, we like the idea of having directed something, but the actual work of it is just something that is like wasn't natural.
Yeah, we've been through like at least more than a year of trying to like put together a script and trying to go directed. I think I still like the idea of it.
Mm.
And if you're down, we can still try. I think ultimately it's down to personality types. Some people are in some ways a bit more independent, and they can kind of go in a corner, write, figure out something, go pick up a camera and like go try and shoot stuff and experiment. I think we're natural corporate simps. We thrive in like honestly, I think we do thrive in a big company, and we, as much as I like to pretend to hate it, but like to get into managing teams and politics and back and forth with the clients and like kind of working within a big company, I actually do love it.
Mm. And it's also, I think what I like about the job is that it's essentially just like problem solving. Mm. And there's never really a kind of like solution that what worked last time won't work this time. And it's like the solution as like a piece of comms isn't always a film, doesn't need to be a film. So it's like sometimes the best kind of manifestation of the solution will be like, okay, we need to explain this thing in 30 seconds. But other times it might be like a ginormous installation or like, you know what I mean? So it's like our job is like the actual like film production part of it is quite small compared to the rest of it.
I always forget that actually.
Yeah.
You guys are doing print and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Like films, so.
Yeah.
Tell us about the films, the filmmaking.
The film is the fun part.
Yeah.
But then if that's the thing, is that you're working with someone that is like a specialist, and like we're not specialists, we're generalists. So then when you work with someone that is like, I'm very good at this one thing, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not. Like, because I sit down and I'm like, oh, I'm not special.
It's funny that you bring up this thought of like problem solving. I think if we were to write our own film, and we have tried, like, what's it about? Is it about us or what do we like? It's just like, I think we are capable of it, but with agency work, you're presented with a problem and you have to solve it. And like, I think we kind of like that pressure.
Yeah, some people thrive on the pressure, don't they, as well. Mm. But again, with any script, you put a lot of yourself into it, don't you? You know, from all sides.
This must be quite nice seeing it being like blossomed out by different people, like ideas, like, oh.
Seeing an idea.
Turned all right.
Yeah.
Oh, was it shit? I won't do that again.
Oh, I shouldn't have given that one to Craig Bingham.
Yeah, never again.
Ozzy's really fucked up that one.
Yeah. All high praise for the next murder mystery.
Nailed the murder mystery, but yeah.
Great.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I've got down through all my questions.
Guys, honestly, thank you so much for coming on. Like, really appreciate your time. And it's just, I'm glad I did that murder mystery on that stag do and got to me.
This is fun. You know, I'm reflecting on an experience that I'm having right now, but it's very rare that you get to sit in a room, a quiet room, and like not touch your phone and just talk about stuff. So it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Because I loved it.
Well, we'll go for a cheeky pint and have a chat after as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Nice one.
And maybe we'll leave the stag do chat when we end this.
Yeah.
The world break. Yeah. We won't bring it up again.
No.
But no, thank you so much. It's been great coming down here, and it's really nice to kind of see the perspective of the other side of this document that we're sent, where someone's pored over it for days and weeks,
yeah. Going like thrown it right in the bin.
Yeah, print out the printer into the shredder. Yeah, sorry.
Nice one, Cole.
Cool.
All right. See you soon.
Thank you.
No, bye.
Thank you.